tonight on Big Head Mode. We're talking pretty graphics. Hey, we're going to be talking graphics in video games, specifically the good kind. Carlo is with me tonight. We're also going to be talking, Carlo, I'm reviewing Mario Paper Jam.
Oh, at last.
Finally. All the critics have been asking for it, and here it is. We've also got a bit of show and tell, and a pretty exciting announcement.
Mm-hmm.
That's all coming up.
Stay tuned.
That's right. Tune your ears. What should people do to prepare, Carlo?
They should get ready to play...
No.
Missed it.
That's all coming up. Stay tuned. You're on Big Head Mode. That's right, you're on Big Head Mode. I'm Ben O'Brien.
And I'm Carlo Ritchie.
And we're here to talk games right at you all night long for the next hour. So, almost all night long. Hey, let's start off with a really exciting announcement. This is just kind of...
Shoot it at the people,
the
Ben.
Wires. So, tomorrow is the first day of RTX, the weekend-long...
Rooster Teeth Expo.
Which I know all you Roo Teethers and Rooster Teeth fans and Funhouse fans are very excited for. And that takes place all weekend. We've got a little panel, 12:30, Truly Awful Games. We've got ourselves, Ray Johnston, Steph Ben Dixon, Jordan Raskopoulos, Michael Hing, and Bart Era. He'll show up at some point.
He always does.
That's on at 12:30. At the same time as the Achievement Hunter panel.
Yeah.
And
so we're going to get really big crowds.
We're going to get everyone who can't make it into Achievement Hunter, just walk next door,
yeah.
Come say g'day, we'll play some terrible games.
But that's not the exciting news.
No, the exciting news is that night, so tomorrow night, we have a bonus stage as an after-hours event for RTX.
And we've got not one, but two, and possibly three or four exciting guests.
So the guest we announced yesterday, Eve Beauregard, very excited to have her on board. We're going to talk cosplay.
Cosplayer extraordinaire.
And Yennefer, how she became a mystical figure.
Mm-hmm.
From a Polish folklore to the book. But we're very happy to announce we are going to have from Rooster Teeth and Funhouse, Adam Kovic and Bruce Green.
Pew, pew.
I just realized I should have queued up the Mexican celebration music we normally use. But there we go.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Why have one when you can have both?
Yeah.
We have two Funhouses. And as Carlo said, maybe more. Who knows?
You never know.
But there we go. So now is the time to get those tickets. Go.
Make like Charlie Parker, and now is the time.
Exactly. Make like Charlie Parker and do a Brill sax solo like he did. So there we go. That's very exciting. And it's going to be a cool little... It's going to turn into a sort of meetup event, really. So we've got the 75-minute show, and then afterwards, as usual, we all hang around and play games, and the fun houses are going to stick around, play a few games, have a few drinks.
We've got an exciting indie title, haven't we, Ben?
We've got the old favourite Dungeon League.
Bang, bang, boom.
Which really is, you know what, and it would be my sincere hope to try and introduce the fun houses to Dungeon League. We could try and get them to play.
It's my sincere hope to beat them with Reginald. Again and again and again.
I mean, you probably will, let's be honest. You're almost unbeatable with that character.
Yeah. So, guys, it's going to be an extraordinary show. It's going to be a lot of laughs. It's going to be a lot of energy. It's going to be a lot of high fives.
So just go to the Facebook page, Twitter page, and Giant Dwarf page for booking details and all
that
stuff.
If you're listening to the podcast, this came out the day of or far after this event.
If you're listening to the podcast, hopefully there will be video or something floating around. Like we'll try and document it.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're listening to this on the podcast...
Follow this link.
And you haven't heard about it, odds are we didn't secure those things, in which case, we're sorry.
Follow the link in the description.
Yeah. Ding! Link is there. Let's talk other stuff now. I've been playing games, Carlo.
Games?
On my new Elite controller.
What?
On the Xbox One.
Is it wild?
It's pretty wild.
What have you assigned the pads underneath?
The paddles too?
Yeah.
Both. So there's two lots of paddles on each side. I assigned both sides of paddles to the click-in thumbsticks.
Oh.
Because I hate clicking in thumbsticks. I always feel like I'm just slowly crushing the controller to death.
Does that mean that you pay... So, you, just to be get some clarity on this, does that mean that both paddles on the left count as the clicking in on the left thumbstick?
Yeah.
So, you and can pull, you can press right. either of those paddles, or press both of them together, or do you have to press both to
click?
Oh,
no, you can press either.
Okay.
It just... I did that because, like... So, it defaulted... It sort of randomly assigns default buttons to them, and so one of them was like A and one of them was B, and like every time I'd put the controller down, my character would just like throw a grenade at their feet, and I'd be like, no, this seems like a bad idea. But it's sort of, you know, it has pros and cons. It's like the first game I really tried it out with that new custom setup was GTA 5.
Oh, yes.
And it was great in GTA 5 for, you know, how you click down both thumbsticks to do your emotes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hate clicking down those thumbsticks because it always feels like you're just like crushing the controller.
Yeah.
And it was great to be able to just pull the things on the back, except I kept accidentally bumping them. So my character kept going into like stealth mode when I really didn't want them to. So look, it's all right. It totally is just a luxury controller. I mean, I only really justified, like it was a Christmas present for me technically, but I only really justified the idea of getting it because like so much of what we do is playing video games. Like if I was just a casual gamer, I just don't know if it would be worth it. It's such an expense. It'd be like buying like, I don't know, a leather bound, I don't know, what's something super
dictionary.
Casual? Yeah, yeah. Like something that you only use. It just feels really, feels good.
Or paying rent for a week.
Yeah, yeah. It feels good, but like it doesn't, you know, it's
justify
not,
the
it's
expense.
It's not the go-go gadget of controllers. I don't know what people are like. It sort of, it feels really good to hold. Like those, it made me realize how flimsy those Xbox One controllers kind of feel after a while. Because it's got this sort of like leathery or like sort of rubber back grip surface.
Oh,
so
yeah.
it never kind of gets like sweaty, or it's just sort of always like, you know.
Oh, that's good. That's handy.
And it's kind of like solid. It's like a solid unit in your hands, you know.
Well, see, I haven't been playing very, very many console games at all this week because I've had my entire week consumed by a mega game.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Like, I have been entirely consumed by a 51-player game of Battlestar Ithaca, which is a bridge sim... Well, it's a entire fleet simulator for Battlestar Galactica run by Dave Harmon, who does... Dragon Friends at Giant Dwarf Theatre.
Which it's an excellent podcast as well.
Yeah.
People should check out if you're fans of D&D.
Yeah, it's really fun. Comedians playing Dungeons & Dragons. So he has designed this game, 51 players. For people who are familiar with Battlestar Galactica, I'm the CAG. For those who aren't familiar, that means I can control all the pilots in the game. I have 7 pilots. And last night, one of my pilots died. And now this is in the series of things like...
Can I just... Before you keep going, I want to give people like a little glimpse into that. We had a writer's meeting last night for Bonus Stage at your house, Carla.
That's
and
right.
When I arrived, you and another friend of ours, Wyatt, who's playing this game with you, you were right deep in the middle of some battle studies. And you guys were both actually... You had a really serious table set up with each of your laptops, and you'd go back and forth between... sitting there, staring at your screen, not talking to each other,
yeah.
To like literally bouncing around the room with just energy and excitement over this bloody game.
Well,
why it's going, it's just so exciting.
The thing is, we're not allowed to, one of the rules is that you're not allowed to talk about actions or the game itself outside of the game with other players.
Really?
So Wyatt and I can only talk...
To lock you into the fiction of the game.
So Wyatt and I can only talk about mechanics of the game, or say something like, this is really exciting, or aren't you having fun? And last night we were in a very particularly terse situation, tense situation rather.
Because you were planning on betraying your superior officer.
No. We were standing down our superior officer.
Well, that's like
at the
different terminology for the same thing, really.
At the request of a superior officer. So, you know, so we were following orders as far as I'm concerned. We'd all lost support in this one officer. They had lost faith in themselves, and they ended up resigning after we had put into place all this thing. But it's just
as
so
long,
intense.
As long
Ben.
As you were just following orders, I suppose it's all okay then.
But you see, Ben, it's like having a job. It's like having a stressful job that runs for 33 hours at a time. Every cycle takes 33 hours, and you tell yourself, "Oh, well, I don't really need to. I can just take an hour away or 2 hours away," and then all the way at the back of your head, you say, "I need to refresh the page and check on things."
See, that's exactly why I didn't do it. It sounded like a lot of fun, and then I just thought, I saw how much was involved, and I was like, "This is a lot of work." And then Wyatt said to me last night, with utter glee, I left my house three times in the last 5 days. That's awful.
I have to submit a work roster every 33 hours for a group of people. Like, I'm a manager of a small bar.
You know, essentially what you've done is you've just gone on top of your actual job and your actual life. You've gone, what if I just pretend I'm a door-to-door salesman for most of my day? So on top of everything else, I'll just put on a suit and then just like knock on my girlfriend's door and be like, I'm here to sell you vacuum cleaners.
It's so intense. Oh, boy.
It sounds fun. So you lost a pilot, and that's I assume you're not taking that well.
No, not taking it well at all, because I think I've proven who did it.
Oh, my.
Mm, but I won't get into that in case someone's listening.
That's true. They could be. There could be Cylons among us. And that's part of the fiction too, right, of these 50, how many players?
51 players. There are 7 Cylons. So those are players who are actively working against everyone else.
And no Cylons have been revealed yet?
Not yet. Not a single one. We've lost one person so far. There's 50 people left in the game. One person died.
And it is a 2-week game. Is that correct?
That's what Dave thinks.
You think it's going to be over before then? That's excellent. We'll have to get Dave to come in on the show to actually talk about mega games.
Well, because he has to follow every single forum. I'm only in two forums.
I don't know how he handles it, really.
I don't understand
all these games. I mean, we've talked on the show before about Zedtown. There's a big zombie experience that Dave also orchestrates. And and just sort of having to be in that command station and keep track of all the little, you know, the mini narratives that come out of this huge game.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. He's basically a professional puppet master.
Yeah.
That's what he should have on his business card.
Dancing on his strings.
We all are. We're doing it right now. How do we know this isn't one of his mega games? Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Let's go to a song. This is a song requested by you, Carlo, from a game, Rise of Nations.
This is a real-time strategy game. It was on the PC early 2000s. Really great game. Play it if you can check it out.
And it's a historical epic.
Historical epic RTS that you start in sort of the Neolithic times and you work your way up until the modern era and into the future. So kind of advancing in the way, like not Age of Empires, but you go through a vaster period of history. And this is the official song that plays when you finish the game in the credits.
So here we go. Rise of Nations, and once more, this is a historical epic. And we're back.
There you go.
There we bloody go. Rise of Nations.
So yeah, when you click on the credits on that game, that's what plays when you get the credits.
What a treat. What an incentive to finish that game.
Great little Easter egg.
And I've experienced this in reverse too, so I've heard the credits, and then I'm going to play the game going, when do I get to that bit?
It's actually a really great game. A really, really fun game. I really recommend Rise of Nations.
Check it out. It's a new one from 2003. Let's crack into some show and tell. I've been playing a game that I wouldn't have thought I would be enjoying it, but I am. That is called Assassin's Creed Syndicate Jack the Ripper.
What?
There's DLC for Assassin's Creed Syndicate based on Jack the Ripper, and you know what? It is a much better game than the main game.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Because it has, like, so the whole premise, right, it's set like 30 years or so after the game ends, and you play just as Evie, for starters, which is great. And I just want to point out, I think it might be the first time I've ever played or seen a middle-aged woman as the lead protagonist in a video game. I couldn't think of another example. Because ordinarily, I mean, female protagonists are already kind of, you know, you've got slim pickings, but they're still, most of them are kind of like young.
In their 20s.
You know, they're sort of, they're projected to a certain image, but it's just like, that to me was great. Like, even as an assassin, seeing this character that looked like she stepped out of a BBC production of something was really cool.
Well, I mean, if you played my Mass Effect games, you could have had a middle-aged woman.
That's true.
A protagonist.
That's true. But I mean, I guess where the design was there.
I'm just being facetious.
I know. I mean, look if we could make the game characters, they'd all be middle-aged women.
Yeah.
That'd be an exciting game.
Be Lin Beifong. Su Beifong.
Oh, man. Don't get me started on an Avatar game because we will be here all night. But it's got a really cool... So it's sort of like... You're also trying to rescue or find out what has happened to your brother.
Mm.
So the male protagonist who was on the cover of every copy of the game is taking the backseat to the DLC, you know, which is great. And it's sort of like, I wouldn't mind it if that's what it was like from the get-go, to be honest. Because he's a huge pain in the ass in that game. Like, he pretty much causes every problem that happens in London within that, like, 8-year period.
Mm-hmm.
But you suspect he's been captured or killed by Jack the Ripper. And Jack the Ripper has some weird tie to the assassin.
Spooky.
And you start to suspect that it's like... I mean, first of all, he's not like a weird mythical. He's just a serial killer. But then you start
Don't
tell
us what your suspicions are, Ben.
Okay.
Let people get those suspicions on their
own.
But
it's a very intriguing telling of...
Jack the Ripper's story.
A way of looking at it. But because like people have this idea of Jack the Ripper, it lends a really great tone to the whole thing. Like, whereas my problem with the original... or the main game, is that it was kind of like it was this great representation of London, but it had no real tone. It was sort of like just, here's a great-looking city.
Check it out.
And then it was just kind of generic tone. Like the Assassin's Creed 2 was like so full of Renaissance like imagery and charm that walking down the street, you were just like, oh, ciao. But, you know, it was all sort of like, oh, you felt like immersed in that world. This was just sort of like, it's London. It's still Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, like, it feels like it's much smokier and darker, and there's more sort of like, it's moodier and more atmospheric. And there's some great missions. Like, I mean, Assassin's Creed, they've always had a problem with, I mean, a large part of Jack the Ripper mythos is killing prostitutes. And that's something that Assassin's Creed have proven they're quite good at putting in games, killing prostitutes. I mean, it's one of the things that Anita Sarkeesian pointed out. You know, the trope of women used as set dressings that Assassin's Creed is very guilty of. And the first like hour of that game, when a few prostitutes were killed, I kind of thought, you know, it does all these things that are better, and then it's sort of falling back in the same pattern.
I guess that's historical, though. I mean, like, that's something that you can't just... I mean, I'm not saying that that argument's invalid with other games and other things, but I would say with this specific circumstance, it would be strange to...
That's what I rationalised, Carlo. But then... they twist it anyway.
Oh, that's good.
Some of the side missions are, it starts out with prostitutes getting like sort of tormented by clients. And I think, oh, good, it's another, you know, rescue a helpless woman thing. But then the mission is actually you intervene and then you kidnap the client and then you have to walk him through the busy streets of high society London to shame him. So it's called the Walk of Shame side mission. And so you just sort of march him through crowds and they all go, my word, how undignified, and like turn their nose at him, and then you walk him all the way back to the you know, the prostitute's madam, and then she just kind of like spanks him and is just like, you never treat us like this again. And it's just like, wow, that's great. I'm just shaming her. Shaming someone instead of like in other games I feel like it would just be like, oh, he's bad to a woman, kill him. And it's kind of this weird icky, like, you know, justifying violence, and then I don't know. It just felt like it was a sort of a nice way to reinforce that's not an appropriate way for anyone to conduct.
Yeah, business, totally.
You know,
no, that's great.
So yeah, I've been having fun with that. I've been having fun.
Cool. Well, there are two fun things that I'll talk about. One is very brief, so I'll get that out of the way. First, I've been playing through the new Tomb Raider. Finally.
Oh, you finally finished the last
one. Wow, you know? And now I'm playing this one. Also great. My side point is, why are all these people in Russia, why they all have British accents? These native people to like...
Oh, in the middle of that
In the middle of Siberia?
Like the...
Yeah, surely they'd be
speaking... rebels or whatever they are.
Yeah. Surely they'd be speaking Nyenets or like one of the many myriad minority languages that are spoken in Russia. I feel like that was a perfect opportunity to bring a minority language into a game.
Maybe they're not Russian. I don't know what they are.
And then...
Good point.
that's just a point that I wanted to make. But the other game that came out just last week or over the weekend on Xbox One was the Banner Saga Xbox One. And this game is really great. There are a few issues. Like, one of the sad things is that the very first cutscene is fully voice acted, and then there's no more voice acting for the rest of the game, which is always a shame. And also, the game does seem to end quite abruptly. But it's just a really fun game to replay because there are so many achievements that are awarded for different styles of play, different choices.
And so, it has, because I still haven't played Banner Saga, but this is the one that's sort of based on Norse mythology or actual Norse history, is it?
It's based on like a kind of it's a loose interpretation of like Norse history as well as sort of fantasy element.
Yeah,
and
cool. And it has like choice based strategic combat and then choice based narrative.
It has strategic combat and choice based narrative. But you'll have really interesting decisions.
Speaking of language,
you have a daughter, for example, and one of the achievements is to get through the entire game without her ever having to fight humans.
To shelter her from the outside
to shelter her from ever having to commit essentially murder. And there's another character that you meet at the very start of the game who is they've rigged it so that so many choices will lead to that character's death. So one of the achievements is get through the whole game without that character dying. But there's so many decisions. One of them would be like you might not even pick them. Like this isn't a real example, but it might be something like, oh, you find three farmers on the side of the road with a cow. Do you take them into the caravan? You go, oh, yeah, no brainer. And it's like, during the night, they eat like such and such, you know? So it makes it really difficult for some decisions and really easy for
I reckon
others.
That like just as a small thing can be so like easy to engage you in a story-based game if you're told that you have the power to save certain characters. Like if you're told this character will die unless you do something, it puts you on edge for the entire game.
Yeah, yeah. But it's great because there are so many different ways. I'm playing through now my third time of Banistaga on the Xbox One.
Mm.
And it's just, there are so many. The game rewards entirely different playing styles in entirely different ways. So you can play as this really stoic hero who's sort of getting things done. You can, like, your caravan is helping people, and that will be rewarded in certain ways. Or you can play in the other extreme, which is. Your original caravan is all that matters and you're not taking any stragglers or anything and the game rewards you in other ways for that as well. So it's really, really fun. And they have announced that from their original Kickstarter, they don't need to do another one or get any new funding or what have you. They're going to be making the second and third ones. So that's exciting.
I think they're doing a third one as well.
It's meant to be a trilogy.
That's awesome.
Maybe I've gotten that wrong.
And so the second one's meant to be coming out this year, I believe, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just looking at it now. Like, I mean, I've always known this game has a good rep. Here's two things I didn't know. Written by former BioWare developers.
I did not know that
either. Like, so Stoic Games is it's a trio of indie developers formerly of BioWare.
Oh.
Which I guess makes sense then if it's so narrative driven.
Mm.
But here's what else I didn't know, that all the music is done by Austin Wintory.
Yeah. It's a really fun soundtrack. It doesn't, I think, compare to, like, Journey, but it is still really good. And the art is just so beautiful. Everything is
art by Arnie Jorgensen.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary.
That's the thing that, I mean, and I'm glad you brought it up because we're going to be talking about pretty graphics after the next song. But, like, that's the thing that always, like, jumps out to me whenever I see any trailer or photo from this game. It just looks incredibly just hand-drawn.
Yeah, well, this is one of those games. Everything looks like a sort of vignette, like a Hergé vignette or Miyazawa. I've gotten that name wrong, I think. But, you know, like these really beautiful hand-drawn, they look hand-drawn illustrations. So it's almost, it's very difficult until you get into the strategy map to sort of go, oh, I'm looking at just something beautiful versus I'm playing a game, you know?
Yeah. It is a shame that, like you say, that it's, it has that fully voiced cutscene at the beginning and then it kind of isn't. Like, do you think that that's something they'll probably do in the second one?
Oh, definitely. And I think that was totally a restraint of...
Based
on how much they earned from the original Kickstarter. But I imagine that from the money that they've made from that first game, they should be able to get voice acting for the second.
Yeah. We can only hope, Carlo. Mm. We can only hope. Let's go on to some music. This is a little song I like to call Uranium Fever.
Boom.
From Fallout 4. We'll be back after this.
Here we go.
Welcome back. You're still on a Big Head Mode and we're still talking games. Let's talk pretty graphics, Carlo.
Let's talk them. What is your benchmark for graphics, Ben? Do you have one?
Like, graphics? Well, I mean, I put graphics, I think, in two camps. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your stunning, realistic graphics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of graphics like when you see an E3 demo for The Division or something for the first time and you go, oh my God, that doesn't look real. Oh, he closed the door with his hand. How did he... You know, the graphics are incredible. You know, and so I guess animation and everything falls into that. But then you have like stylized graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like stylized graphics are always more impressive because there's more. I mean, I know that realistic graphics, you have, you know, 1,000 artists and some people whose job it is to just, you know, brush the texture of a blade of grass.
Yeah.
But like the clear artistic vision of something like Wind Waker. Like my girlfriend and I were playing Wind Waker HD mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, and I was just like, this game still looks incredible.
Yeah.
It still looks better than like most games that come out now.
It is a really beautiful art style, Wind Waker, that's for sure.
I think like cel shaded or cartoony stuff, it just always looks.
Well, even Life is Strange had a quite interesting sort of blend between those realistic graphics and a sort of cel-shaded feel. You know, like it was quite like this sort of strange pastelization.
Yeah, and I felt like it got more that way the further you went through that game.
Mm.
Like the first episode didn't have a ton of those sort of like color palette, you know, tableaus.
Mm.
But then sort of as you went on, you just get these amazing scenery shots of this, yeah, where it did just look like an artwork, like a painting.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a really fun game recently. I think The Witcher 3 has to be, in terms of those realistic graphics, has to be pretty high up there. You know,
what about, let's like scale it back now. Like, what are some of the first times you remember being blown away by graphics in a game?
Well, I remember when Ocarina of Time came out, that we, like my friend Lawrence and I, we remember looking at Zelda and going, it's like a real person. We couldn't believe when you first met Princess Zelda, and even Link, we're just like, this looks like real life.
Yeah.
And then the next most staggering moment for me was Halo, and I remember looking down at the ground and they had this, like this grass effect. And we're like, it's like real grass. It looks like they've just taken a photo of grass and put it there. And I remember when we played on the lounge with Lewis Hobber, which is on YouTube, you can see that.
Yeah.
We were playing through the HD remake of that, and we were going, oh, this looks amazing. Wonder what it looks like when you go back to its original graphics.
Yeah.
And it was staggering
how different it was.
Yeah, because I remember that being at the time just the benchmark.
I mean, even like it's the little details that always blow me away. Like in Halo, I remember the thing that always stood out to me was how your assault rifle had the real-time ammo count on the actual gun.
Yeah.
And when you fired, it kept track of... I remember being like, how does it do that?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I can just look at the gun. And it, like now it's like, well, I mean, I guess it's no different to putting it on the side of the screen. You know, it's still the information. But still, like...
And it is extraordinary to know... Not to know, rather, just those subtle increases in graphics capability with each generation and with each year of a game being made that you don't really pay attention to if you're just playing games along that continuum.
Yeah.
It's sort of when you jump back or jump forward if you're playing a lot of retro games that you do really pick up those differences. Like when I played Ocarina of Time recently on my big screen TV, I was like, oh, this is terrible. Like, it still stood up. Like, the pixelation was pretty extraordinary on an HD TV. And then going to Majora's Mask, which was only a few years later, I was like, oh, wow, this is drastically improved.
Yeah.
But at the time, those graphics in my mind are pretty much part and parcel.
You go back to those games and you see lots of little tricks that seem quite simple that really blew me away at the time. Like, I mean, a good way I reckon... A good example of this is the Rare Replay Collection, which is because there's a lot of games that we all grew up playing. And Rare had they did that kind of... It was almost like they scanned a real 3D item and then kind of superimposed it into the game. Like, that's what it looked like sometimes. Like, their explosions looked like what now would be like a really dodgy Photoshopped explosion on a YouTube video or something. They looked like that, but at the time it was like, oh my God, it's like a real explosion. Or same with like any liquids. Like if you got water on the screen, it was just like it had been like superimposed onto the thing.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But at the time it was just sort of like, it felt like sort of pop-up graphics almost, like real sort of...
Three-dimensional aspect.
It just looks like such a cheap way of doing it now. And they had the... GoldenEye had one of the first games when I became aware of the art that goes into covering up invisible walls in a game.
Mm.
Like, I think it was the Siberia level when you're in the snow and you could walk up to the tree line and it was just the clearly painted trees, but then they kind of had... trees that you could see through, and then like a meter of space, and then the painted wall behind it. Yeah, so it's like a meter of depth, and then it's just all wall. And I remember just being like, wow, like looking through. I wonder if there's anything there.
Yeah.
No, there wasn't. It was a painted wall. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, let's switch to like stylized graphics. I mean, what are the games that stick out to you in that aspect of, you know, these stylized graphics?
Well, I mean, we already mentioned Wind Waker, but mm-hmm. that's still...
And Banner Saga.
Banner Saga, totally. Journey. Journey's right up there.
Mm-hmm.
Stylized graphics are great games to watch, too.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if it's a really beautiful game, I'm also a lot more forgiving in terms of the actual gameplay. Like, if it's sort of a joy, if it's like a real aesthetic delight to kind of just explore that world or how it looks, I'm more forgiving on it.
Mm.
With stylized graphics, like, I'm not the same if it's super realistic graphics. I mean, it might get a slight nod from me if it looks really great, but if it's a boring game, I won't keep playing it. Because it's like, oh, it's ultra-realistic, who cares? But if it's stylized, it's sort of like, wow, this art is just so beautiful that, sure, all I'm doing in this game is picking up boxes and putting them down somewhere, and the game is called Box Mover 4000, but, gee, it looks
digging
good.
These graphics. Yeah, I really... It's like, what was it called? Child of Light.
Mm.
I mean, it was a fairly repetitive game. Once you got down to it, this sort of just this sort of grinding these combats, and they were slowly getting harder, and then you were trying to find gems to make your weapons better, etc. But it was really beautiful to look at, and I found it much more engaging visually than like Ori and the Blind Forest, for example, which was also a really, you know, visually interesting game. But I don't think it had that same, because Child of Light really did feel like you were in a children's book of some sort.
Yeah,
you know?
But you know what? I think one of the most one of the key things to those stylized games is lighting.
Mm.
Like, and Child of Light was all about lighting.
Oh yeah,
and the dark shades and I mean, it makes me think of Limbo, which is another like really visually striking game.
Yeah.
There's
another great indie title, Never Alone, as well.
Yeah.
This sort of really really interesting, you know, snow versus underwater versus.
What's an art style you'd like to see in a game that you haven't seen?
I always find, you know, when you see concept art of extraordinarily realistic games, and they've done this really beautiful... I always think of the one like the Fallout 4 concept art. Have you seen that?
No.
The Fallout 4 concept art is really gorgeous. Like, there's these amazing prints. I just want to see a click-and-point adventure set into those artist worlds. Or there's that new Australian indie game, The Space Adventure. What's it called?
The one that we're... Objects in...
Not Objects in Space. The one that's a huge RPG on those planets.
Oh, Glory.
Glory.
Yeah.
Glory. Like, the concept art for that game, you can check it out on their Twitter and things, is amazing. I would just want to do a click-and-point adventure in one of those games, you know? Like, because they're just so splendid to look at.
I mean, that's the thing of concept art too, isn't it? That it's sort of like, and in many ways, it's almost impossible for a game to ever live up to the concept art. Because when you focus on just how beautiful the art is, your imagination just goes racing. And you just think of the world and you think of, wow, a game in that world could just be whatever I imagine it to be.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being like Destiny, you know, or...
Yeah.
That game ends up being, that's a backdrop where you shoot a lot of people. It's
exactly.
Really, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is funny. I think that's what art should do in a game. Like, it should really trigger that kind of emotional reaction.
Well, that's why it was a shame in some ways that BioShock Infinity really blew it. Like, it started off and it introduced you to this extraordinarily beautiful world that you are under no pressure to explore or to fight anybody. And you were just... I think everybody's experience of that game in that first couple of hours of going through BioShock, like Columbia, was just this extraordinary scope and beauty of this city, which then I think they lost so quickly as soon as it became a shooter. Like, plazas started being more uniform, the artscapes started being far less diverse.
Yeah,
I think that game, and I've said it so many times, it's really repeating myself, but just would have been better if it wasn't a shooter.
and I hope that that's what Ken Levine goes on to do now that he's not at, you know, 2K.
Mm.
You know, it would be nice to see him just focus on that design stuff
in
the world and the characters rather than shooting. I mean, there's enough shooters. Let's save the interesting concepts for other games.
Yeah.
I really like my my old flatmate. I came home once to him playing an early access game called The Dream Machine.
Mm.
And I've got a photo of it here, which obviously doesn't work with radio. But as you see in that image color, it's actually claymation.
Oh,
it's
a wow.
claymation video game.
That's cool.
And ever since seeing that, I'm like, that is an art style that would be amazing for video games.
Yeah, yeah.
It is so...
Well, evidently it is amazing for video
games. Yeah, and like that was a sort of... It was a point-and-click game. It was a story game, but I just thought, like, I just want to see that replicated, in every game. Like, I want to see people try that and just experiment with it. And
yeah. Well, that's why I'm excited for Yarny.
Yeah.
This game...
Unravel.
Unravel. That's right, yeah. Unravel. Yeah. Because that's, I think... real landscapes, right?
There's something about it. I think it was either that or that the photography or was based on. I'll look it up. Better not talk out of. But yeah, you're absolutely right in terms of how it looks. Though that's sort of like, I mean, it basically does just look like you're a side scroller where you're walking through real environments.
Mm-hmm.
That comes out very soon too. That game.
You can pre-order it at the moment.
Yeah, it's inspired by the landscape of Umeå, Sweden. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, Umeå. I mean, it's funny because like every now and then you do get a game that you just sort of that it is very flat concept, but it looks good, and you kind of just go, well,
yeah,
it looks all right.
yeah, totally. I think that's just the nature of it. I think people that's why when it gets into this discussion of are video games art or not, I think that is a strong argument for why they are. In that some games, you're not really interested in what's happening in the game. It's the actual game itself that you're appreciating, you know?
Yeah.
There was these games I remember you used to learn how to type that they used to have on computers like Hugo's.
Games and...
not Hugo's. There was something like... There were always these adventures like you were in a haunted house and you had to go through it and it was all about how well you could type.
Yeah.
And you wanted to be good at typing because you wanted to explore more of these worlds, you know? And they were really cool, very visually appealing world. And you go, oh, what's through this trapdoor? I want to open this trapdoor, you know? And I was never good at typing, so... never saw much of those.
So you never saw those worlds? Mm. No. Well, there we go, kids. Lesson to learn. Always type. Just type a little bit every day.
Learn to type.
Let's go to some music, hey? And then come back and we'll do a quick little review of Super Mario Brothers... jam thing. What's it called? Paper Jam. Bang. This is from Mario Galaxy. Carlo, let's talk about a game now on 3DS called Mario and Luigi-o.
At last.
Paper Jam Brothers.
I've been waiting all day to talk about Paper Jam Brothers.
Well, I've been playing this for ages, and then I forgot about it. got distracted by Phoenix Wright and Persona 4 and all the other games I'm playing on handheld. And it wasn't until I read a IGN review a couple of days ago that completely panned this game that I remembered I'd played it.
Completely panned?
Yeah. I mean, they hated it. I mean, it's not a bad game. I mean, there's a few elements where it kind of feels like It's playing it safe. It's following a formula, but then it's also a Nintendo game, and it's like, I mean, doesn't that just describe Nintendo's last 10 years of game development? Playing it safe, working with a proven formula. But I do enjoy it. It's sort of that same series, the Mario and Luigi RPG series that I really enjoy, because they've got really fun. They've got fun sort of refreshing combat, and they're the only Mario games that really kind of try to establish like a world, a Mushroom Kingdom world. And that's the thing I like the most. Like, I like trying to see what that world is.
Yeah,
who the subjects are, like, what their hierarchy is. Like, oh, they've got mailmen and, like, people whose job it is just to clean the castle. And it's like, that's that stuff that you never see in the platforming games.
Yeah, yeah.
And this game's like that. The main premise of this is, you know, you have the main Mario and Luigi universe, and then Luigi trips and accidentally drops a book. Clumsy Luigi.
Luigi.
what a bloody dickhead. he drops a book, and it makes the Mario paper universe just sort of tumble out of the pages and collide with our universe. Crazy. And so what happens then is a series of wacky encounters with cartoon doppelgangers and all that stuff. And so basically, the two versions of Bowser team up to kidnap the two versions of Princess Peach.
Right.
And it's sort of, it's a funny idea. I mean, I guess from a narrative point of view, it could have been funnier. Like, there's certain things that I just think of. Like, you know, having two Peaches locked together, it's sort of like, I mean, surely they could combine their talents and abilities to overcome this. And it's like, no, it's just twice the captured damsels. Like, they don't do anything. At one point, Paper Peach turns on her side and walks through the bars, and it's like, oh, look, I can do it, and then walks back in the cage, and then stays in the cage. And it's like, I mean, you could have just left. You could have gone. But, you know, so it's Mario and Luigi teaming up with Paper Mario, and it kind of, it's basically a standard sort of, I guess, top-down Metroidvania sort of thing. Like, you progress through this open world, but then you hit dead ends, and you have to unlock abilities to kind of keep going through the dead ends. And every new ability you get, you can go back and unlock new stuff.
Yeah, right.
And there's kind of the creative about the abilities. Like Tomb Raider. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's a classic thing in games. It gives you that sense of progression. And sometimes it feels forced. I mean, sometimes this game will just give you, like, ridiculous arbitrary dead ends, you know? You'll be running through the mushroom plains or whatever, and then you hit an actual brick wall, and Lakitu comes out of nowhere and is like, oh, no, your brick wall. You better go rescue 30 trapped toads so you can proceed through the next area. It's like, yeah, okay. Okay, Lakitu, I get it. You need me to waste time revisiting areas I've already been just to make up for the fact that your game isn't as long as you want people to think it is, but okay, I'll do it. The combat is the best thing about it, like, because it's a turn-based... in fact, it's probably, like, I think one of the original Paper Mario games was the first turn-based game I properly played and enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the thing I really like about them is that you never... When the enemy turns, it's their turn to attack, they can still... You can still interact with them. So, like, you can choose to jump or dodge with timing-based button presses when they go to attack you. Mm. And sort of counter-attack that way. In the same way that when you go to attack them, you don't just hit the button and watch the attack, but you can press the button again to time it to do stronger attacks, or potentially just, like, totally screw it up. And then the more, like, you know, when you have three characters to control and then you're fighting multiple enemies, it gets really chaotic. And sometimes you just, like, you know, if you're not actually dodging attacks, you'll get defeated, like, instantly.
Damn.
And so they've got, like, really good complex battle. Like, way more complex combat than I would expect of a Mario game.
Sounds it.
And I think that's the strongest thing in the game, to be honest. I mean, sometimes it can be just really, like any RPG, it can be a bit repetitive.
So you're saying that the story around it and the, like, the game itself doesn't lend itself to the complexity of the combat?
I guess so. I mean, like, the story around it is fun enough, but it's pretty simple and straightforward. Like, it's an open world, but you're very much going in one direction. There's not a huge amount of breaking off and exploring. And there's not a huge amount of sort of, like, open world. Like, other RPGs like this have, like, Pokemon, you know, you have the appeal of collecting everything and trying to, you know, get it all. It doesn't quite have that appeal. But overall, I've had fun. It's a fun little sort of Mario game, and it, you know, I'd say not for the hardcore sort of RPG enthusiast, but maybe for the Mario fan who kind of wants to get into RPGs, who doesn't play a lot of RPGs, it could be a good gateway game.
For the Mario fan that has it all...
The Mario game who wants it all. Maybe. Anyway, look, let's go to some messages and come back and say goodbye. Well, that brings us to the end of another show, Carlo.
And what a show it was.
Well, the highs, there were lows, there were midway points. Don't forget... bigheadmode.com.au for the website, and our bonus stage show, which is tomorrow, assuming you're listening to this live. If you want to find out about when our next bonus stage show is, whatever time you're listening to this, go to Giant Dwarf, and you'll see that there's actually a bonus stage page that has upcoming shows and stuff there, or just our Facebook and Twitter. In the meantime, we'll play you guys out with Super Mario Bros. 2 by the mini bosses, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye.